Perched on the west coast of mainland Europe, Portugal is a land of beautiful beaches, atmospheric cities, sensational food and drink, and some very scenic rail journeys. To talk about all this and more, today I'm joined by Portuguese travel writer Joana Teboda, who loves exploring her country by train. First, Joana gives us all the details on what it's like riding the rails in Portugal, including stories about some of the country's gorgeous railway stations, some advice on experiencing the breathtaking Douro Valley by rail, and some tips on what to snack on before or after your journey. Then we turn our focus to her hometown of Lisbon to chat about the city's craft breweries, scenic overlooks, why June is the best month of the year to visit, and much more. All right, it's time to go to Portugal.
Close the gap between the train and the platform.
Let's welcome to Rails, Ales, and Old Towns, Joana Teboda, a travel writer based in Lisbon and Madeira, Portugal. If you've read anything about Lisbon in Fodor's Lonely Planet or DK Eyewitness, you've probably read her stuff.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Let's talk about rail travel just in general. Like, what are the things that you love so much about exploring Portugal and Europe?
Yeah, so I've lived in Prague for 2 years, actually. So enjoyed the time to take train rides from there because it's in the central of Europe to like Berlin, Vienna, and then Portugal as well. I like taking trains to little known towns that, you know, you just happen to stop and see something on the train and you can just get off and explore something that you wouldn't normally see. I like train rides because I think it allows you to slow down a bit, because if you're in a car, like you can just drive through places without actually knowing the people that are there or like the places. And with a train, I just enjoy the landscape a bit more. I'm able to read, which I can do in a car, and have a drink or have a snack whilst I'm exploring a new place.
So when you were in Prague, you said you took a trip to Berlin?
Yeah, I took to Berlin and to Vienna by train, and a couple of like side trips to different towns in Czech Republic as well.
That Prague to Berlin is pretty scenic. On the one side, you're going by the River Elbe, cuts through that area called the Saxon Switzerland, I believe.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. It's a really nice ride. I would definitely recommend that.
Now, what about Portugal? You know, if you Google Europe by rail or, you know, best places to explore by rail, you're going to see Switzerland. You're going to see Germany. You're going to see Italy. Hardly anyone seemingly talks about like seeing Portugal by rail.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because the country is on the edge of Europe. So most of the train lines that you see are actually by the coasts, which like makes it for actually a nice scenic ride. But if you go further into the inland, you can't really explore as many places by train, which I guess is why it's not so popular, because parts of the country are a bit more remote. So I think maybe that's why it's not so well known, but it has some really good scenic rides that I definitely recommend. There's also like thematic rides as well, like I know in some areas in central Portugal, they have like a cherry blossom route where the train passes through like cherry blossoms when they're in bloom. The Douro has some different trains. Like they have an historic train that takes you along the Douro Valley, the Douro River. It's like a steam train. You know, I like old trains more than the modern trains. Obviously there's the pollution that goes with them, but it's really magical. And this one in Porto, actually, they gave you a port wine tasting, so you can like be drinking whilst, you know, enjoying the valleys, the vineyards and the terraces.
An ongoing theme of Rails, Ales, and Old Towns is there are these places that I've been wanting to get to for like 20 years and somehow have not made it. And the Douro Valley is I seemingly everywhere I go, I'm being followed around by articles and TV things about how great this area is. And
yeah, I mean, obviously, one of the starting points is Porto. And, you know, I'm from Lisbon, but I love Porto. It has like this artistic vibe, but you see it like by the train station, which is like decorated with thousands of tiles, which are really, really, well, Portugal in general has loads of tiled buildings, but this one is really impressive. And now recently, they also have a train that goes specifically from São Bento, the train station with all the tiles, to Pocinho, which is like further east. So then you get to travel all the way from the city to the Douro Valley, and you see the scenery change from like buildings to like valleys and the river. It's very different from the coasts because, you know, the coast, you have the beaches and everything. But I would say one of the best trips if you want to go to inland Portugal, like, and see a bit of the river and everything. and get some wine as well.
Some of these towns that, you know, where there's wineries where you can stay at and things, they're accessible by rail.
Yeah, some of these towns are accessible by rail. I recently was in Regua. So in Regua is one of the train stations that you can stop, and they have a couple of restaurants there where you can have some food. And some of the wineries are close to the train station, so you can go there. And obviously, one of the benefits of doing that is that you can drink it, you know, go back to your hotel. What is if you're driving, which some people do, you know, drive around the Douro Valley, which, by the way, it's a lot of zigzag routes, roads, and very narrow.
No.
It could be dangerous. Train rides are good for having the wine tastings at the same time. And also the historic train ride stops in Pinhão, which is also a very nice train station with blue and white tiles. And there you also have access to a couple of wineries.
I know day trips are a necessary part of travel, but I always try to, if I can, stay the night.
I definitely recommend spend the night. I stayed in a hotel where, you know, you wake up and you look at the river and the mountain just in front of you. It's very different from just, you know, arriving an afternoon, having a glass of wine, and then just going back to Porto. It's not the same thing.
And if anyone's listening who, you know, wants to take a moment to Google the Douro Valley, and, you know, we're talking just this meandering Douro River, these terraced vineyards. Yeah, it's like something from a movie.
Yeah, it's hard to explain. So it's one of the oldest wine regions in the world, because Portugal has different wine regions, but Douro has its specific character because of those like terrace vineyards and the zigzagging roads along the river.
Is there anything specific about like traveling Portugal by rail that's kind of quirky or different to the rest of Europe?
I guess the fact that we have like these thematic trips is one thing. The fact that we have urban trains, you know, that do like regular trips, like for example, from my hometown, Cascais, which is a seaside town, to Lisbon, people take that train ride every day to work because a lot of people work in Lisbon. But, you know, you look at, you know, outside and it's just beaches and the ocean. And, you know, for someone that comes from the outside, that's a scenic ride. For everyone else, it's like, oh, we're just going to work. Even the train stations themselves, like, for example, the one where you get the train to Sintra, which is like a town in the mountains that has palaces and a medieval castle. You get that from a train station in Lisbon that has like this really beautiful neo-Gothic facade, which stands out from all the buildings in the downtown Lisbon, because most of it was like renovated after the big earthquake in the 18th century.
Yeah, I did want to ask you about that, because you see these interiors of the train stations, and you touched on the one in Porto, but also I've read your writing about the one in Braga.
Yeah, there's all over the country, in Braga, in Aveiro. Yeah, even, you know, along the Douro Valley, even in the Alentejo. Actually, this is an area that I cover a lot, which is the countryside of Portugal. There they have like these stations. Most of them have actually been abandoned, but they might have been converted to other things. So, for example, in Castelo de Vide, also one of the prettiest train stations in Portugal, really nice facade, blue and white tiles, but it's been deactivated and it's now a small guest house. So you can actually stay in the train station. And one fun thing that you could do is cycle through the train tracks. They have like this activity from Marvão, which is also in the Alentejo, like in the north of the Alentejo, to Castelo de Vida, where this guest house is.
I've read some of your writing about this Alentejo region, and it's definitely obviously close to your heart.
Yeah, it's a strange thing because it's only when I got this assignment a few years ago to go to the Alentejo and kind of cover the region, I kind of got this connection to it. And since then, I've been covering a lot more. It's the biggest wine region in Portugal, so a lot of the wine that you see in the supermarket comes from the Alentejo. But the food is delicious. Everyone there has more of a slow-paced lifestyle, because, you know, a lot of it is to do with the working in the farm.
Obviously, it's a bit of a broad generalization, but is it sort of accurate to say that, you know, a lot of people are rushing to get to the Algarve and they're going past this area where if they stop for a couple of days?
Yeah, so it's very different from the Algarve. So the Alentejo also has, so it's the biggest region in Portugal. So it has a part of the coast, which is very different from the Algarve. It's a lot wilder. You get to walk along the cliffs. Some beaches are not as easy to access. Then you go inland and you have medieval castles, all sort of dotted, you know, close to the Spanish border, especially because we had obviously this battle between the two countries. And then because there's not so much of a city and not so much development, the sky is so like black. You can only see the stars In some areas, it's just so dark. There's no lights from the cities. That has actually been recognized as like a place for stargazing, which is what I've been doing the last few years when I go there.
You know, when you get that moment when you're on a trip and you look up and you see all these stars, it really is a special experience.
Yeah, and especially like if you can actually see them, because, you know, in some places you can see a couple, but it's just, yeah, it just gets so dark that you could literally just look at them.
What are some destinations that you would say are great for hitting on by rail in Portugal? Because we know a lot of people are going to come into Lisbon, or they're going to be coming to Porto. But let's say instead of doing 4 nights in one of those cities, they've extended it to a week. And now they can go 2 nights, 1 night somewhere else. What are some ideas you'd want to put in people's heads?
So I would say Évora, which is like the capital of the Alentejo, so you can easily get there from Lisbon. I would say Tomar, which is like a Knights Templar town, which you can also access from Lisbon. Covilhã, which is more in the north, well, center, and it's more like a village or a vibe. Aveiro is beautiful as well. It's from Porto, it's easy to access Aveiro. Even from Lisbon, it takes a bit longer. But there you have like these gondola style boats, and which, you know, a lot of people compare it to Venice, but it's very different because the boats there were actually used to harvest algae before. So, but now they're touristy, so you can get a boat tour along the river there. Yeah, I think those places are some of the ones I would recommend if you want something a bit different and all accessible by rail. Also the Algarve, you can access like the whole of the Algarve, actually, well, most of it has a line cutting through it. So you can visit a couple of small towns in between if you don't have a car, because, you know, especially if you arrive at the Faro airport, you might want to go to different towns, and some of them, like Lagos, is really beautiful. You can access by train. I feel like in Portugal, some of the trains, you know, have become more modern, but a lot of them are still very old. So you still get this very old style charm if you look at, you know, like the seats and the old patterns, or some of them are still made of leather, or, you know, depending on which carriage you get. And it's also part of the fun, you know, just going on a train.
When you're getting on a train, is there anything you like to take with you on the Portuguese train, like a Portuguese, anything special, snack?
So usually, so close to train stations, you usually have these traditional cafes or pastelarias, which is our pastry shops in Portuguese. If you go to a cafe in Portugal, you usually have a counter. And on the counter, you have the sweet section and the savory section. So the sweet section would have like your pastel de nata, the Portuguese custard tart that everyone loves. And it's different every pastelaria. And then the savory section, you'd have something like codfish cakes, pastéis de bacalhau, or croquettes, or, you know, samosas, depending on where you go. So I'm a sweet tooth, so I usually go for the sweets, but occasionally I would also get some savory snacks. So that's what I like to carry, and have a coffee or something to go along with it.
What else would be in that sweet section besides the pastel de nata?
So there's so many. So depending on what region you are in Portugal, you actually have regional sweets. But some of my favorites, I would say the Bola de Berlin, which is kind of like a sweet donut filled with like a egg custard. It's a strange thing, but they usually sell it in Portuguese beaches. So there's like an association for Portuguese people with the sweet to the beach, not just in the pastry shop. So that's one thing. There's a couple of like muffin style things. Like there's a rice cake, which is quite nice. It's usually dusted with a powdered sugar on top. Depends what you're into. A lot of the Portuguese sweets have just eggs and sugar, so they're very sweet.
If you like your custardy sweet things, then you're going to love Portugal.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And like, for example, in Aveiro, you have the ovos moles, which is like this, just again, egg sugar mix, but it's encased in these like kind of like wafers, like white wafer sort of structure. And it's shaped like shells, like maritime motifs and stuff. So yeah, every town kind of has a different sweet. So if you go to a cafe in Lisbon, if you go to a cafe in Porto or Aveiro, you'll find different things.
I love, whether it's a bar or a cafe, just that atmosphere of one right around a station. You're sitting, passing the time. You mentioned coffee, and I'm glad you did that, because huge coffee fan. What's the coffee scene like?
So it's changed a lot. Like, actually, there's so many different ways of ordering coffee in Portugal, which some people might get a bit confused. So usually most people would have an espresso. And if you want something bigger, if you want something with milk, then it would change according to that. But if you want your specialty coffee, there's also obviously lots of coffee shops now doing that. And I do like them sometimes more.
I can get my flat white.
Yeah, if you want something a bit different, like a filter coffee or something like that, you definitely go to a specialty coffee shop. But sure, there are loads now, especially in Lisbon and Porto.
That's the beauty of it, is to mix up. That's what I think is the fun part of travel is, yeah, you go to the traditional, the place where, you know, people haven't changed what they're doing in 30, 40 years. And then the place that's doing stuff like in Sydney, Australia, and in, you know, Austin, Texas at the same time. You know, like, you get a little bit of everything. You don't want to get stuck into doing the same stuff all the time, but mix it up. That's what, it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I like to mix it up myself. I mean, I like to go to a traditional cafe, but sometimes I, you know, I want my flat white. So,
and your avocado on toast.
Exactly.
And a perfect example of mixing old and new is craft beer. There's a place for the hole in the wall cafe slash bars that are just serving the local lagers. In Portuguese case, it's Sagres.
Yeah, Sagres and Super Bock are the two like rival beers.
And that's a cool place probably to have a lager and maybe catch a football match on the television or something. But this is 2024, so we also need to know about, you know, some cool breweries that are doing some fun and innovative things as well.
So I'll start with Lisbon, and I guess it's where I know most of the beers because that's where I live. I think 2013, there was Cervateca, which is kind of the first craft beer bar in Lisbon. They kind of started selling different beers, but the breweries kind of emerged a bit after that. So before, we were like trying different beers from different countries, but Portuguese craft beers appeared maybe like 2014. You'd have a couple more. So Dois Corvos is one of them. Then you have Musa. Musa is quite popular because they have like these, you know, play on word beers like Born in the IPA or something like that, or, you know, Red Zeppelin. So they're kind of playful, and they have a big connection with music as well, because in their brewery, they host a lot of concerts and stuff. So that's where they come from. And Oitava Colina, which for me has a special place because it started in Graça, which is the neighborhood where I live. So I've always have a special connection with that, especially because the beers they have names are named after a couple of the little neighborhoods within the neighborhoods. So like Vila Berta, which is a popular place to celebrate Lisbon's summer festivities. So it has an interesting history there as well. So most of the breweries right now are actually based in Mervila, which is a neighborhood on the east side of Lisbon. There's not much there. It's like, so a lot of these industrial warehouses were converted into breweries or art galleries or museums. And so these breweries brought a new life to the neighborhood. It's an interesting thing because with craft breweries, I feel like there's like a kind of a companionship. So like these people are all friends with each other. So they encourage you to go to the brewery next door. If there's ever a beer that you want to try somewhere else, they'll go, oh yes, they're doing this mix of something. We really should go there. I like to see that in the craft beer world in Lisbon.
If I heard you correctly, there's a cluster of these craft breweries in one area.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Mervila is where you can find most of the breweries in Lisbon.
Since you do spend a good majority of time in Lisbon, definitely wanted just to get a few of your best advice for the city.
If you want to see the city, it is, you know, biggest party mood festival, then summer is the best time to visit. So the whole month of June especially is when they start celebrating, and you see people like grilling sardines outside and everyone's dancing to these, like, it's a weird music style that's called Pimba, where it's kind of full of like weird innuendos, so you'd have to know the language to kind of understand it. I've written a whole article about this because it's a weird Portuguese obsession. If you live in Alfama, which is the historic center of Lisbon, basically you can't sleep.
So June in Lisbon, it's a party all month long. Grilling sardines, street parties, music. So let's say you're there and you want to break away from the party a little bit. And you want to take in the city, the view of the city, because there's no skyline like Lisbon. Any advice on the viewpoints?
I would say for me, some of my favorite viewpoints are in Grasse because, you know, that's where I live and that's, you know, why I'm close to it. But also it's the highest hill in Lisbon. So you do get quite a pretty good view from up there. So you have Mirador de Grasse, and basically they actually built a new funicular recently. So you can, instead of walking up the hill, you can take the funicular up, which is really nice. It's like painted bright yellow, like the traditional trams in Lisbon. I don't know for how long it will stay that color, but we'll see. And it's free at the moment. So if you go now, you can actually get a free ride. Might be charged later. So that's one of my favorite places. And then if you want something a little bit more hidden, you can go a bit further up the hill to Mirador Signore do Monte. And there you usually also have some people playing music. And so it has more of a relaxed vibe. And you get to see the Mirador de Grasse on the other end. So you get a different perspective of the city.
And most of these viewpoints, there'll be a little kiosk selling drinks and things, right?
Yeah, usually, yes. So in Grasse, you have one there, which sells a couple of things. So obviously, bar, beer and wine. In the other one that I said, actually, there is not a kiosk, but there's like little street vans that have also selling coffee or something, or you can bring a bottle of wine or a bottle of beer and just, you know, make your own picnic at the viewpoint. Sunset is the best time to go to the viewpoints in Lisbon and have a drink with some friends. That's the local way of doing it.
So you're not biased, but you're saying Grasse, the viewpoints there.
Definitely. I mean, Alfama is also nice, but Alfama is very touristy. So, oh, if you want something a bit different, also Mirador Santa Caterina, which is more in downtown Lisbon. So if you don't fancy walking all the way up the hill, this is like everyone goes there, the locals, the tourists. And it's more of a younger vibe. So you hear lots of people, you know, there's a few buskers there. So it's quite lively. Yeah, everyone just gathers there. So that's also a good point.
I'm hoping you've got one little secret site, like maybe if you have friends in town, where are you taking them? Like to see something that most people just totally miss.
So one of my favorite places, it's a street. It's Rua do Poços Negros. And they have a couple of like artist ateliers there. So I like to go there, like check out the ceramics and everything. But one of my favorite places, it's a tea shop, which is called Companhia Portuguesa do Chá. And they sell tea blends from all over the world, including Portuguese tea from the Azores. And it's just, you know, the smell of tea when you walk in. And it's actually, I believe it was an old shoe shop that they've repurposed into a tea shop. So it has like all this historic furniture, but it's just, like the smell of tea when you walk in. It's just a trip for the senses, I would say.
Okay, that's a great tip. What about like savory food? You know, we know about, it came up earlier, the pasta de nata's. We know about grilled fish. Any other little, you know, food and drink things that you would definitely recommend for us to try when we're in Lisbon next?
So for drink, I would recommend a ginjinha, which is kind of like a sour cherry liquor, which you can get close to the Rocio train station that I mentioned previously. If you search ginjinha, there's a few bars around the Rocio area. That's a drink that, you know, sometimes it's served in a chocolate cup, depending on where you go. And you eat the chocolate cup afterwards.
Okay.
So it's a double treat.
Thank goodness.
And then for food, I mean, codfish is like a big thing. You see it everywhere, like roasted, fried codfish cakes is a thing. Bacalhau à Brás is a really good dish, which is served with like kind of like scrambled eggs, fries, codfish.
And this, the ginjinha, that's like, that's the kind of thing you just go in there and you get one and you just kind of tip it back, almost like an espresso.
No, actually you savor it slowly. So the places that they serve it.
Like I said, ginjinha, that's the kind of thing you savor it really slowly.
Yeah, exactly. Because sometimes they can come with the fruit. Like in some places, they'll ask if you want con elas or sem elas, which means do you want it with or without the fruit inside the cup? The fruit comes with the pit, so you have to be careful, obviously, when eating it. And it's a bit sour, so I don't usually order with it. But most of the times when you go to these places, like the floor is really sticky because, you know, it's the sweetness and you drink it slowly. And most times you don't sit to drink it. You're standing outside. These places are open from the morning till the wee hours, like midnight. And you get old men going there drinking their morning Xinjiang. Then you get older people, you know, tourists going there in the afternoon for Xinjiang as well. So you have like this mix of crowds that go to these places.
They're kind of hole in the wall type places.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're very small. Sometimes they don't even have like one of those tall tables. You just outside standing with a drink. That's how it is, and that's the drinking culture in Portugal in general. Like you, if you go to Bairro Alto, which is like the party district in Lisbon, you get a glass. You know, you get a beer or you get a cocktail, but most of the times you go outside to have it because the bars are really tiny. And part of the fun is like hopping between bars, basically. So.
Yeah, that picture you just painted there of like, you know, hopping between bars on a warm summer night, that sounds like the epitome of the city.
Yeah, and just drinking outside, you know, just grabbing a bottle from the supermarket and just heading to the nearest viewpoint and just, you know, toast to the sunset. That's my tip for everyone going to Lisbon, really.
Tell me about this road trip that you just took.
Yeah, so I've been meaning, well, my dad has been meaning to do this road trip from the north to the south of Portugal. So there's this road called N2, which I guess is the equivalent to Route 66 in the US. So in Portugal, it starts in Chaves, which is a small town in the north, and it ends in Faro in the Algarve, which is the capital of the Algarve. And in between, you pass through pretty much all the regions in Portugal. Like you pass through the Alentejo, you pass through the Douro, you pass through obviously the Algarve, and also like the center of Portugal, they have these schist villages, like stone villages, which are really beautiful. Sadly, you can only access them by car because transport there is not very good. But still, very much, if you can, I would recommend going there.
How long did it take?
So I guess you can take it in different ways. I chose to do it in a week, so we could spend a night in different regions. Some people do it in 3 days, which I think is insane. It's 738 kilometers in total. So yeah, it takes a while. So yeah, you could do it fast. You can do it like I did in a week, or you can even prolong it and do it for 2 weeks if you wanna. If you like, really like a place and you wanna stay there longer, because I, for example, wanted to stay longer in Douro. I wanted to stay longer in the center of Portugal. I mean, I've been to the Alentejo several times, so not so much there. But, you know, depends what you want to see.
Will we have an opportunity to read about your adventure somewhere sometime?
Yes, I'm working on an article for a client, so that will be coming up soon, and I'll post it on my website on my features section. It'll probably be there. Cityodes.com.
Thanks so much for coming on Rails, Ales, and Old Towns and sharing your love for exploring Portugal and
Thanks for having me. And yeah, if anyone's coming to Portugal and wants some tips, feel free to send me a message. Also, you, if you come to Portugal, feel free to send me a message for some tips.
the gap between the train and the platform.
All right, well, thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed that trip to Portugal as much as I did. As always, I've placed a link in the episode description that'll give you a little more detail on some of the things that came up on the show, including those craft breweries in Lisbon, those tasty Portuguese pastries, the alluring Alentejo region, and a few other things. For the occasional hit of European travel inspiration, and to hear the latest news about the podcast, feel free to give me a follow on Instagram and Facebook at Rails, Ales, Old Towns. All right. Talk to you from Europe on the next episode.